Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, we are back for an unprecedented second hour of the Weekly Worldview because there was just too much news this week that I had to get to. So we're doing a second, program. I'm not sure if it'll go a complete hour, but that is one of the advantages of being at liberty here on the World Wide Web to, well, basically go as long or as short as I need to go to just get it all out of my system, which is pretty much what the show is about. And I just hope that you get some edification and possibly even some level of enjoyment out of the broadcast. As we were scanning the wires in between broadcasts, I noticed that the Boulder County Student Council here in Boulder, Colorado, they've passed an ordinance. They don't want any more big houses in Boulder. Now, Boulder is famous as like Haight-Ashbury East here in Colorado. A lot of, aging hippie types, okay? People whose tattoos are really faded and who blew out their minds with all kinds of narcotics and whatnot back in the 70s. The Boulder Student Council, which is populated, I'm certain, by a majority of those type of people, they've passed an ordinance saying no more big houses, nothing over 4,500 square feet in Boulder, at least in the city of Boulder. And that's, I get that's par for the course for a bunch of aging hippies, I suppose. Now, I don't think they've restricted the size of basements because people like that, you know, if they had any kids at all, you know the kids are going to be moving back and living in the basement. So I don't think they've passed an ordinance against basement size or against having a 32-year-old son living in your basement. But you know what they need in Boulder is they need an ordinance enforcing leg and armpit shaving, specifically amongst the elderly female hippie crowd out there. You know the ones. They ended up in Boulder following the Grateful Dead back in 1974, ended up getting a job at the car wash and just never left. No, and now they own an antique shop or a Native American decor, handcrafted little booth thing on the Pearl Street Mall. That type. Well, that's what they really need. This ordinance against big houses, and that's not going to be helpful for the future of Boulder's economy. Although, with the current trajectory of the economy in general here in the United States, perhaps the ordinance will just be self-fulfilling because no one will be able to afford a 5,000-square-foot house once the socialists that the elder hippie types out there in Boulder, once all the socialists they elected finish their job of destroying the country, or at least destroying the economy. They're not going to destroy the country because I won't let them, frankly. All right. So that was just... The big news, I missed the news last week about Oprah Winfrey is ending her show. Have you heard that? Shocking, shocking news. After 25 years of relatively meaningless blather syndicated via the television, Oprah's going to end her show. And apparently there was a special with her and her partner, I think she calls him. His name is Stedman. Her and her partner talked about their relationship. Not only is she ending her show, apparently she's ending her DNA line as well. Yeah. And that's sad. I mean, I'm no fan of Oprah Winfrey. Okay? Oprah Winfrey, I believe it was in her book. Was it in her book or was it in an interview where she said that one of the proudest moments in her life was her first abortion? I can't remember. Anyway, it's documentable. She said it. She's proud of it. She said it was a liberating experience. She's one of the most liberated women on the planet, apparently, at least in her own mind. She's ending her DNA line. Apparently, she is not going to reproduce, and that's sad because even from one as vacuous and worthless as Oprah Winfrey, and I'm talking about in a spiritual context. Obviously, financially, she's worth quite a bit. And apparently, she can move some product, you know, and she can put butts in seats, you know. I'll give her that. But on a spiritual level, she's rather meaningless and empty. And all of her accomplishments in life, when, you know, we spend about, 75 to 100 years here on this planet, this plane, in this mortal coil, as it has been dubbed. And then we move on to the next life, which lasts, well, the rest, which is eternity. And so all of Oprah's accomplishments here in this 7,500 years, whatever she gets, they're not going to amount to a hill of beans on the other side, in my humble opinion. And the good thing is we will find out. There will be a judgment day. Yeah. Last I checked, and I could pull this up on the internet and check some statistics. Let's see here. I'm running it through. Okay, I've got my spreadsheet out here. Let me go to the latest data from East Anglia out in England. Yes, the data still, the death rate is one each. And it's apparently, it's maintained steady at 100% for all of documented history. So every one of us is going to pass from this mortal coil, from this earthly plane, into eternity. And where are we going to go? Well, I have my opinion, and it's fairly well documented. You know, they say no one's come back and told us. That's why nobody knows what's going to happen after we die. But I would attest that there is one man who came back and told us. And I'm willing to talk to you about him. I'm not gonna get into a whole gospel preaching session here on the air, because that's not necessarily what the show is always about. But I am always willing to stand up and say that Jesus Christ is the only one who came back from the dead. In fact, he was crucified. He was buried in the ground for 3 days, and then he rose from the dead. And he showed us what's going to be happening on the other side by quoting the scriptures that had been accumulated for the many centuries prior to his earthly incarnation. He's the guy who did it, and that's why I'm with him. Now, you make your own decision about how you want to spend the large majority of your existence, because this existence is a very short and fleeting, almost a moment in time when compared with the yaw of eternity that is laid out there waiting for you. So you make your own decision. I'm just telling you where I'm coming from, okay? And so how did I get off? I was talking about Oprah Winfrey. Yeah, it's sad that her DNA line is going to end, because one thing I will attest to is she is an intelligent person. And she probably could produce some very impressive offspring, but she has chosen to choke off her lineage. And she is a fine representation of Western civilization in the modern era, in my humble opinion. So, Oprah, you're a disappointment, okay? That's all I'm going to say. All right, now let's jump into the news. I was in the domestic tranquility file when we ended the last hour. And now that we begin our unprecedented second hour, I want to start in the justice file from Iowa City, Iowa. This is an interesting tale. An anonymous letter with $500 inside and a plea for forgiveness showed up at an Iowa Catholic college. The author of the letter admitted stealing a portable radio from a teacher's lounge at Clark College in Dubuque in 1955. The writer tried to make amends by slipping five $100 bills into the mailing sent the week before last. The mail went to the college president, Sister Joanne Burroughs. So Sister Joanne received this letter with $500 in cash inside and an apology. And the letter bears few clues to the writer's identity, as a fake return address and a Chicago postmark. A university spokesman says that no one is around at Clark College who would have remembered the theft. And she says it's good Catholic guilt probably weighed on the writer's conscience all these years. Well, I doubt that. First of all, Catholic guilt is not good guilt. Catholic guilt is one of the worst kinds of guilt ever propagated on the human species. But this person who stole a radio, let's say that radio was worth, oh, I don't know, what was a portable radio worth in 1955? They were actually probably worth quite a bit. Adjusted for inflation, this thief has made reparations, has paid restitution now to his victim, and I think has done a very appropriate thing, although a public confession would have been more in line with my thinking. But for whatever reason. I don't think it's Catholic guilt that motivated this fella. I think it is probably the realization that God is real and coming to the end of your life here, more than likely. And it's time to get square with the world and to confess your sins and get right with God before you cross on over into eternity. And since he sent $500 and the radio was probably only worth, oh, I don't know, $50. Of course, $50 back in 1955. Anyway, he paid several multiples of what the radio was worth, and so I think the fella read the Bible, which that definitely would not be associated with anything Catholic. Not to offend my Catholic brethren, but I've just noticed that the masses I've attended, that the Bible is rarely cracked open by the folks in the pews. What's the deal with that? Anyway, I've got some good Catholic friends who work with me on the personhood front, and I don't want to offend them, but I've just got a problem with the lack of the reading of the Scripture and also the praying in front of all the statues. That makes me a little uncomfortable. Okay, that's all. And the whole Catholic guilt thing. And the fact that Catholicism, in my experience, has driven more people away from the gospel of Jesus Christ than most things. I mean, certainly Catholicism is not as bad as the public schools at driving people away from Jesus Christ. It's not as bad as the modern American justice system at driving people away from a desire to understand their Creator. But it sits up there in like the top three or four, okay? The Catholics have, they've turned a lot of people off about the true and living God, their Creator. And I guess I don't want to go any further with that. But there you have it. Okay, more from the Justice File. Dateline Boston, Massachusetts, from the Associated Press. A federal judge has denied a convicted murderer's request for more hair removal treatments as she waits to find out if she can get a state-funded sex change surgery. Now, you can't get through three or four words of this story without wanting to laugh or cry or throw up or be amused or assume that our entire culture is deranged. I mean, every three or four words. Denied a convicted murderer's request for more hair removal. That right there. I mean, convicted murderers should be getting, you know, how about pulse removal? Forget hair removal. How about brain activity removal? Anyway, this is a convicted murderer awaiting. Now, let's see. Is this a boy or a girl? They say she is waiting to find out if she can get a state-funded sex change surgery. So let's try to figure this out. Bear with me on this. She is waiting for sex change surgery. So let's assume that this is a girl. Now, if she is waiting for sex change surgery, why would she want hair removal? I thought that she's that want to become he's wanted more hair. Am I wrong on that? I don't know. All the guys these days are shaving their bodies and they're all freaks. So maybe even transsexuals want that hairless, you know, whatever, 14-year-old Norwegian boy look that they all seem to go for. Anyway, let's delve into the story and see if we can figure this out because it is quite confusing. Let's see. The judge ruled last Wednesday that Michelle Kosalek failed to prove irreparable harm or a serious medical need for the aforementioned hair removal. Kosalek hung her head and dabbed her eyes when the decision against her hair removal was announced. Now, Kosalek was named Robert when married to Cheryl and was convicted of murdering her in 1990. Oh, my goodness. I got it backwards. Well, wait a minute. Maybe, is this a girl? Wait a second. Is this a boy who became a girl? No, wait a second. I got it backwards. Kosalek was named Robert. He was a boy. Okay. He married Cheryl, and then he killed her. Okay. and then he became a girl, and now he wants to go back? Is that? I'm still very confused. See, this is the problem, ladies and gentlemen. We don't respect the proper boundaries of sexuality as laid down by our Creator. You can't figure out what's going on. It's all very confusing and frustrating. Now, I don't mean to belittle the story. I mean, this is a murderer. Whatever sex this thing is, and I can't figure it out, frankly. Whatever sex, this person should be put to death for the murder of Cheryl Kosolek back in 1990. Why is this person still alive asking for hair removal if it killed a woman in 1990? That's another question I have. In addition to, what sex is this person? Now, let's see if, maybe if I read the entire article, it will clear things. Kosolek's lawyers have argued that having facial hair is intensely personally stressful to her. All right, now see, they're calling her a her there. But let's see, she was a boy when she got married, murdered his wife, and now she is waiting to get state-funded sex change surgery. I can't figure out what's going on here. Anyway, the State Department of Correction said Kosolek has already received significant hair removal, and remaining hair can be removed by shaving or using depilatories. That's the ruling of the judge and the justice system. It's unbelievable. And I can't even tell if this is a boy or a girl. But one thing's for sure, we can make that hair stop growing as soon as we pull this thing's body out of the death chamber. Now, that's not a bad idea, actually. My extremely attractive audio engineer suggested that just prior to execution, we could achieve the hair removal with duct tape. I think that's... Now, I'm going to post a link to this article on the blog. And so if any of you people can read this and determine what sex is this person now, then I will, I'll give you some kind of prize. Because it's all very confusing to me. But I will post it up there so that this can be investigated, because America needs to know. All right. Now, another story from the Justice File from Los Angeles, California, the Associated Press. Judge Lance Ito. We all remember Judge Lance Ito, right? He's the gentleman who was sitting on the bench when we all felt that sick feeling in our stomach when OJ was acquitted. Do you remember that feeling? I remember we were at work. I was working at a factory-type environment. And all work ceased, and we all went back into the R&D room where they had a television, and we watched the live announcement of the verdict. And I remember feeling as if I had just eaten some bad fish. I remember feeling physically ill. And you know who was sitting in... who was presiding over the affair there that was called a trial was Judge Lance Ito. Now, if you don't remember feeling sick when you found out OJ was found not guilty, you have a problem and you need help. And that's why I'm here. I'm here to help. If you didn't get sick, and in fact, if you wanted to go out and buy a 40-ounce bottle of malt liquor and party when OJ was found not guilty, I'm here to help you. You have a problem. All right, but let's get back to the story. By the way, I got a lot of that out of my system. I was feeling very, very frustrated by the OJ Simpson verdict, and that's one of the things that radicalized me. I now realize, looking back, that it was that verdict that radicalized me. I realized at that point that the entire civilization around me was about to collapse. Now, that was 1995, and here we are nearly 15 years later. And by golly, I pretty much had it nailed, okay? I mean, if you were going to become a radical, that was the point at which you would become a radical. Now, I eventually went to Los Angeles, and with a radio host friend of mine, we purchased a bunch of OJ's memorabilia, and we burned it on the courthouse steps right there. in Los Angeles. So that helped me to get out some of the angst that was built up around the fiasco that Judge Ito presided over. But I'm telling you, I'm not finished, okay? That was just the beginning. Okay, Lance Ito. Why did I bring up Lance Ito? His courtroom, let me tell you what's happening in Lance Ito's courtroom. Since presiding over O.J. Simpson's murder trial more than a decade ago, Lance Ito repeatedly has had his name placard stolen from the door of his courtroom. So people keep stealing the name placard on Judge Lance Ito's chambers. I know, Lexus. Isn't it unbelievable, Lexi, that this would be happening to a judge in the modern-day justice system? Do you have any commentary on that? Do you want to make your radio debut? No, she's chewing on a Sharpie. Okay, that'll quiet her down for a little while. Now, Lance Ito, his placard keeps being stolen, ladies and gentlemen, and he's given up on replacing it. And people who are looking for his courtroom, they have to ask for directions, and they have to, I don't know, be psychic in order to find out where Lance Ito's chambers are. So it's funny to me how things come around. Because you remember the lawyer for O.J. Simpson. What was his name? The lawyer for O.J. Simpson. Jackie Childs? No?
That's for the
Seinfeld. Oh. It wasn't Jackie Childs. Anyway, I can't remember his name, but the lawyer who reminds everyone of Jackie Childs from Seinfeld. Okay, that lawyer. Now, he sprung O.J. Simpson, who was a murderer, and his son was later murdered. And I believe that that lawyer has now since departed off into the great beyond and met his creator. And I can't remember his name, but frankly, I don't care. We'll just call him Jackie Childs. But anyway, and now Lance Ito, whose behavior and his handling of the O.J. Simpson trial really led to the final collapse of the United States, the American justice system. You know, brought it from a justice system to a justice system. Not that it wasn't already on its way there, but Lance Ito, he kicked out the stops on that thing. I mean, it was going down, but when Ito was finished with it, I forget about it, right? So now Lance Ito, theft is occurring outside of his chambers. People are stealing his name placard, and he's just given up. He's like, yeah, well, you know, thieves are going to be thieves, so who am I? I'm just a judge. I mean, this is just the chambers of justice here, and we're going to allow this theft to occur, and in fact, we're going to even kind of laugh about it, and maybe I'll do a reality show about it. But Judge Ito has given up on it. Yeah. Ito confirmed the thefts, according to the Associated Press, in an email to a Superior Court spokesperson. No records are kept at the courthouse on placard replacements, so an exact number is unavailable at the moment. Now, on Judgment Day, if we want to have like a fun fact with the Lord on Lance Ito, we can ask the Lord, how many placards were stolen, Lord? And he'll have an exact number for us. And we'll all have a good laugh right before the Lord pulls the lever on the trapdoor, and Lance Ito is sucked alive down into hell. We'll all be laughing our heads off, and then we'll be like, oh, shock, that's right, he's going to hell, bummer. And then we'll move on to the next one. Jackie Childs, please come forward. All right, so that's Lance Ito and the state of American justice. And as I said, ladies and gentlemen, it's our tolerance as a nation and as a people and as a culture, our tolerance for criminals and the lawyers and judges who produce them that has led to this epidemic of crime. And we're going to get back into that because we're going to dive into the domestic tranquility file for the week. Dateline Addison, Illinois. Police say they have found four bodies in a home near Chicago. The victims are likely members of the family that lived at the residence. Police say investigators responded to a 911 call from a woman, and a woman was among the dead found in the home. The home's doors and windows were locked, forcing officers to break in. Wow. Shell casings were found all around. apparently victims of murder by gunshot here. Perhaps murder-suicide. We'll find out, but maybe we won't find out on this earthly plane, because by tomorrow morning, any interest in this story will have been eclipsed by the interest in the murder-suicide that happens tomorrow morning. The shocking, horrible murder that happens in Chicago or Detroit or Denver or Los Angeles or Seattle or Paterson, New Jersey or South Bend, Indiana or Orlando, Florida or wherever it is, the next horrible murder-suicide, mass murder, it will eclipse this story so that none of us will ever have time to find out why these four people were found in this home in Chicago, murdered, brutally killed. Dateline South Bend, Indiana. A paralyzed Indiana man was unable to leave his bed as his house was being robbed after burglars put a T-shirt over his face. Two men entered this paralyzed fella's home near South Bend last Sunday. They broke through a rear window. Police say they covered his face and then stole a laptop and a $100 bill that was sitting on his dresser. A friend who stops by regularly to check on the victim called police, told them about the crime. No arrests have been made, and investigators have no leads. And here we've got a paralyzed man robbed in South Bend, Indiana. That's the state of domestic tranquility in South Bend, which one would think South Bend is a pretty nice place to live. Unless you own a stereo and have $100 in cash, because then you'll be robbed, especially if you're paralyzed and you're an easy victim. But, you know, it's really, that's sort of a Darwinian crime, right? I mean, this guy obviously not the fittest. You know, it's survival of the fittest, right? Isn't that what our entire existence is based on in the evolutionary model, the evolutionary worldview? This fella actually, if you just go by the laws of science and Darwin, this guy got what he deserved. I mean, wouldn't you agree? Wouldn't you agree that this cripple got what he deserved? I mean, who is he to think he should own a stereo and have any cash in the house? He's weak. We need to purge his genes out of the gene pool, obviously. I mean, who cares about a cripple in South Bend? He's weak. Got what he deserved. Dateline Jupiter, Florida. Four people, including a child in bed, were shot to death during a family Thanksgiving gathering. And a manhunt has been underway across South Florida. And at least as we go to air this evening, the manhunt is still underway. 17 relatives were at the house when the shootings were reported around 10 o'clock in the evening on Thanksgiving. Police are looking for Michael Marriage, a 35-year-old resident of Miami. Let's see, the others killed were all women. Raymond Joseph, a 76-year-old woman, and Carla and Lisa Marriage. These two are 33-year-old twin sisters, and they're the sister of the suspect and a child sleeping in bed was also murdered. Marriage is believed to be driving a blue 2007 four-door Toyota Camry with Florida license plate W427JT. Wow. Thanksgiving Day. I mean, I have a lot to be thankful for. But as a nation, maybe next Thanksgiving we need to stop and just beg for some guidance. I mean, yeah, we can tell the Lord we're thankful, but we could also say, Lord, we've obviously lost our way. Because this is a daily occurrence. I mean, even Thanksgiving Day isn't a day when we get respite from the avalanche of bloodshed and murder that's happening in our country. I mean, if this isn't a civil war, if this isn't terrorism, I mean, it's got me pretty scared. I mean, that's awful. Just awful. I couldn't decide whether to put this next story in the domestic tranquility file or the justice file. It ended up here for whatever reason, probably because I don't think there is a justice file anymore. I should call it the failure of justice file, the lack of justice file, the end of justice file, for crying out loud. Anyway, from the domestic tranquility file, from Oakland, California, the Associated Press reports that two men have pleaded guilty to shooting high-powered pellet guns at dozens of cars on San Francisco Bay Area freeways. They were charged in at least 45 shootings on I-680 in Fremont and 9 others on I-880. Most of the cars just had glass broken, but one passenger sustained a significant injury when a pellet became lodged in his stomach. Sean Wagner, one of the perpetrators, and Rogelio Gomez entered their pleas last Monday to 2 counts of assault with a deadly weapon and 1 count of vandalism. Okay, now they shot at 54 cars. They shot 54 cars. They've made a deal. This is let's make a deal in the American justice system, inspired by Lance Ito and his ilk. Let's make a deal. So they got 2 counts of assault with a deadly weapon and 1 count of vandalism for shooting 54 cars, putting the lives of 54 drivers in danger of imminent death. They got 2 counts of assault with a deadly weapon, 1 count of vandalism. They initially faced more than 80 counts, but they made a deal with the just a system. Hey, there's no need to push it, boys. This is just a system. I mean, yes, we could say that shooting at a moving vehicle with any type of projectile could be considered attempted murder, and we could inspire fear in any teenager who would ever think about doing anything like this again by executing you two little bastards. We could do that, but this is just a system. Let's make a deal. What do you say? What? We'll call it 2 counts of whatever, a broken taillight, failure to yield, and, you know, we'll just call it a day. Prosecutors say that the 2 punk bastards will serve 3 years and 8 months in prison and must pay restitution to the 42 victims whose cars were damaged. So they're going to have them pay restitution. They've got part of that right. Although in this case, this is attempted murder. There should be no restitution. And let's not make a deal. Let's put these boys to death. Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney, and we are rounding second in our unprecedented second hour this week. And I'm more from the Domestic Tranquility File, Colorado Springs, Colorado, from the Associated Press. Alias Clay Oliver is being held without bond in the El Paso County Jail. He's accused of shooting his 49-year-old son, Keith Oliver, of Denver on Thanksgiving Day. The elder Oliver told police that he and his son had been arguing for hours when the victim's mother, 75-year-old Marjorie, asked her son to leave. When the son refused, the father went upstairs, retrieved a .357 caliber revolver, and shot his son once in the head. Thanksgiving Day in Colorado Springs. Colorado, circa 2009, the United States of America. Dateline Patterson, New Jersey, from the Associated Press. A man chased down and shot his wife and their 2 young sons in northern New Jersey on Saturday, killing one boy before he was fatally shot by an off-duty police officer. According to the Associated Press, it was not immediately clear what sparked the gunfire. Well, to the Associated Press reporter, I would suggest that perhaps it was the killer who sparked the gunfire. Is it possible? Am I missing something? The Associated Press isn't sure what sparked the gunfire. Perhaps it was the man running down the street shooting the gun. Do you think? Possibly? Maybe? The murderer has been identified as Edelmiro Gonzalez. He was taken to the hospital after the off-duty cop shot him, and he died a short time later. So why is someone running down the street in Patterson, New Jersey, shooting at his wife and children? What's going on? What could possibly motivate this to occur? Anyway, my prediction, it relates back to sexual immorality, but that's just an opinion because most of these crimes relate directly to sexual immorality. But again, will we be able to find out? Probably not, because there will be 15 other murder-suicides by the time we even look at this story again. And they'll each one will be more horrific than the last. And so it's just hard to keep up with the domestic tranquility file. Ladies and gentlemen, I need a research staff to keep up with it all. And Lord willing, someday we will figure out a way to bring all this violence and bloodshed to an end. Because it's frankly gotten out of hand. Yeah. Frankly gotten out of hand. All right. Let's go to Oklahoma. In Oklahoma City, from the Associated Press, prosecutors in Oklahoma City charged a physician last Wednesday with first-degree murder in the fatal stabbing of his 9-year-old son. Dr. Stephen Wolf allegedly also stabbed his wife during the November 16th attack at their home in Nichols Hills, Oklahoma City. After a neighbor heard screams and called the police, one officer found the murderer on his knees wrestling with something in his kitchen, and he ordered the doctor to put up his hands. So a neighbor heard screams and called police. An officer arrived. Now the officer found Wolf on his knees wrestling. The officer told Wolf to get down on his stomach and lay down. Now, and the officer then saw that the 9-year-old boy, had two knives sticking out of his chest. And he heard the father say, "You know he's got the devil in him." And Dr. Wolf had also stabbed his wife. And all I could think of was when I read this story is that the neighbor heard screams and called police. Man. It's just a shame that the neighbor wasn't armed and wasn't able to take action right then. He may have prevented this murder. He may have preserved this 9-year-old boy's life if he would have just been a real man. And instead of calling 911 when you think your neighbor's maybe being killed or attacked or assaulted, instead of calling 911, you take action. It saddens my heart to know that even in the great state of Oklahoma, that our suburban culture has so feminized the men that we don't know what to do when we hear a blood-curdling scream next door. We pick up the phone and dial 911 like an impotent worm. It's just sad, okay? That's all. And what's really sad is that there's a need for we suburbanites to arm ourselves because our neighbors could be assaulted, brutalized at any moment, possibly by someone within their own family. That's what's really sad. But that's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. That is the reality of existence in modern-day urban America and suburban America. Let's see. Wolf, the doctor, the murderer, who stabbed his 9-year-old son to death, he was supposed to be undergoing treatment for anger, alcohol, and drug abuse issues. He was supposed to be. Anyway, let's move on into the culture file. That was a very disturbing domestic tranquility file this week, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry to lay that on you, but you know, we're not pulling any punches here. This is where we have descended to. From the time when you were a young person looking out into your future, thinking that the sky was the limit and everything was beautiful and good and anything was possible. From that to this, that's where we are, folks. And it's just an unfortunate reality. Dateline Los Angeles, California, from the aforementioned culture file. A Los Angeles Times sports writer who made headlines by announcing he was becoming a woman has been found dead in a suspected suicide. Mike Penner, who was a 25-year veteran sports reporter for the LA Times, was found dead at his L.A. home at the age of 52. Suicide is suspected in the death. So apparently this sports writer stunned the sports writing world back in 2007 when he wrote a column announcing he was a transsexual and was about to become a woman. Yeah. His column became one of the most read articles on the LA Times website and was widely reprinted on internet and discussed on sports talk radio programs across the nation. But apparently Penner never went through with it. He returned to work as a man, disappointing freaks and weirdos all over the country. And all the sports writers and sportscasters and sports announcers who had fallen all over themselves to congratulate this fellow on just being a great guy, girl, whatever you want to, just being great at whatever you want to be. And I remember hearing and reading the sports commentators who fell all over themselves for Mike Penner. Say, what a great, this is wonderful. He's come out. He's gotten a grip on who he really is. He's gotten in touch with his inner self. He's going to self-actualize. He's going to have parts of his body chopped off and just become one with himself. It's a beautiful thing. It's wonderful. I mean, even in the sports world, you're not allowed to make fun of freaks or admonish people that they're about to do something that's completely abhorrent, abnormal, and destructive. You know, I remember in the locker room back in high school, that was one of the few places where you could still make fun of fags. I mean, a fag was a fag, and it was something to be laughed about, something to be laughed at, something to be made fun of. You didn't want to be called a fag in the locker room. Well, I remember when Mike Penner came out and said he was going to have portions of his body surgically removed, take hormone pills, and become a girl as close as he could, as best he could try. The sports world was enamored with him. Oh, it's a wonderful thing. I'm not sure if he made Oprah. But anyway, Mr. Penner has apparently ended his DNA line by his own hand here. Found dead in a suspected suicide at the age of 52 years. It's a beautiful, wonderful thing. Transgendered, homosexuality, sexual immorality, and deviance. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. He's finally really knows who he is. He's turning purple on the floor. His body has assumed room temperature, and it's a beautiful, wonderful, beautiful thing. Congratulations. Way to go, man. You go, girl. All right. Now, it's not really a laughing matter, my dear. Okay. Hey. Alexis got a kick out of that one. I'm glad to see she's in a better mood. I think Alexis has been disappointed that we're only doing an hour a week. She's saying, hey, it's about time, man. Come on. 2 hours. Man up. The whole culture's going to hell in a handbasket, Pops. We need you out there. All right. More from the culture file. Dateline Vallejo, California, and they do call it Vallejo, right? I mean, I used to live out there. It's Vallejo, even though it should be Vallejo. I mean, it's Vallejo, okay? Dateline Vallejo, California. A Northern California mayor is apologizing for comments he made to the New York Times. Yes, he's apologizing. Vallejo Mayor Osby Davis, who is an evangelical, said in a newspaper interview that homosexuals are committing sin, and that sin will keep them out of heaven. That's what he said. Can you believe this? How dare he say something like that in public? He should have been out there toasting the LA sports writer. He should have came out and he should have been saying, man, Mike Penner is awesome. Wasn't his suicide beautiful today? But no, instead, Mayor Osby Davis came out and said homos are committing sins that'll keep them out of heaven. Well, now, of course, now the media did not fall all over themselves to say what a wonderful person Mayor Osby Davis is. They didn't say, hey, we're really glad, you know, we respect freedom of speech and all opinions, and we're so glad to hear Mayor Davis stand up for what he really believes in. It's a beautiful thing. No, no. Mayor Osby Davis was practically run out of town on a rail. In fact, now, a mere hours after the comment was logged into the record here, Davis says now the remarks were taken out of context. Yeah. And he won't use his position to espouse his personal beliefs. So this, ladies and gentlemen, is a very good representation of what it means to be an evangelical. That means you tell everybody Jesus loves them, and then if you tell them anything Jesus said, you apologize for it. If you tell them anything Jesus actually taught, you apologize and say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you. What I meant was Jesus loves you. You know, that part in Romans where it says, you know, sodomites and liars and murderers shall not inherit the kingdom of God. That's really unfortunate that that's in there. Jesus really loves you. You know, and all Mayor Osby was pointing out that, you know, Jesus is going to send a number of people who don't want to live with him. He's going to send them away not to be with him. That's he said it, you know. If you're a boy and you're interested in other boys and that's your mindset and you reject the Creator, God's not going to want to hang out with you. There aren't going to be any gay bars in heaven, okay? So if that's what you're dedicated to and that's your life and that's who you are and you identify yourself as something that's in rebellion to your Creator, God's not going to make you hang out with Him. You're going to go elsewhere. He's going to keep you out of heaven. You're not going to want to go to heaven. Okay? But the mayor has apologized. He's an evangelical and a fine example of evangelicalism. He is. By the way, I just want to make it clear that I am no fan of evangelicals, okay? I think you're all mostly full of crap. I don't think you know the Bible, and I think you're mostly focused on feeling good, wearing the right clothes at Sunday service, being a part of a bigot church as you possibly can, and raking in lots of dough for worthless social programs. That's what I think modern evangelicalism is. And so put that in your pipe and smoke it, okay? You're a bunch of chumps who've abandoned the gospel of Jesus Christ, and you're making people so comfortable out there in their rebellion against God that a number of them are going to go straight to hell with jet rockets, and their blood is frankly going to be partially on your hands because you stood there and said, Jesus loves you. All right. Let's see. Do I want to move into... I got more. I mean, the homosexuals are pouring out of the closet. I don't know if I can take it. I think I need a break. McBurney, and thank you so much to my extremely attractive audio engineer for providing a brief respite from the avalanche of deviants and perverts that I have to cover here on the broadcast as we round third and head for home here in the unprecedented second hour of the Weekly Worldview. Adam Lambert, who is a gentleman that I had never heard of ever in my life until this week, apparently, gentlemen, yeah. I use that term loosely. He is a person. Okay, now I'm a personhood advocate, and Adam Lambert is a person. Now, what's that? It is a person. Yes. He's still a boy. He hasn't had anything amputated. He just wears a lot of eyeliner and you know, that's not necessarily the problem. It's not the eyeliner and the hair gel, okay? All right, now, from Los Angeles, California, Adam Lambert, who is apparently associated with a program called American Idol, which, just think about that. Can you imagine 50 years ago someone trying to launch a show called American Idol? It would have been roundly rejected by the church just because its name was blasphemous, and back then there were enough Christians in this country that it would have mattered. It wouldn't have been successful. But now... I mean, we've just thrown off all restraints, and let's just tell the kids, here's an idol to worship. And by the way, he's a disgusting, deviant, homosexual freak. Anyway, Adam Lambert, who's apparently an American idol, He kissed a boy on stage at the American Music Awards. And here's what he had to say about it. Well, this is from a story from CNN. Lambert, who is openly gay, and what that means, ladies and gentlemen, is not only, you know, there's different levels of homosexuality, I believe. I believe there are some people that struggle with homosexual feelings and even give in to them and participate in homosexual behavior. But they don't like it and they know it's a sin. And some of them are even Christians. And some of them will even go to heaven. But there are others now. And that, by the way, that person, I wouldn't classify them as a homosexual. They don't define themselves by that. It's a sin they struggle with. Just like we all have something we struggle with, right? All of us have something. And, you know, some of us have just, our environment has polluted us way worse than others, and we've actually done something like that. And yeah, well, anyways, that person could go to heaven, in my opinion. Okay, if they're sad, they're repentant, they don't like it. But then you've got people like Adam Lambert who are openly gay, which means not only are they in rebellion against God, but they stand up in public and shake their fist at God, and they encourage other people to do the same. That person is not going to live with God because they don't want to. And God won't have them. So it goes both ways. Anyway, Adam Lambert, who is openly gay, said that the network apparently kicked him off the morning show he was supposed to do the next day, and they edited the broadcast as it went out across the country, tape delayed. And he's upset by that. He said, that's a form of discrimination and a double standard for anyone to object to what I did. He said, women performers have been pushing the envelope for decades. And you know what? The little freak has a point. It's hypocritical. Let's put it that way. It's not a form of discrimination. It's not a double standard. It is hypocritical, though, that our entire culture has glorified and tolerated and even elevated heterosexual deviancy to a religion, practically. I mean, we might as well be in one of the temples back in Pompeii, for crying out loud, the way the modern heterosexual culture is. It's disgusting. And so Adam Lambert, deviant freak that he is, he makes a valid point here. He says, look, we've been letting the girls do this. He said, what's the deal? How can you have a problem with this? Am I not equal? Are you saying I'm not normal? And of course, all the evangelicals and all the conservatives and all the Republicans who have kissed the homosexuals' rear ends for the last 20 years have to stop and say, well, no, we're not saying you're not normal and you're not good. And, you know, well, I guess it's a beautiful thing. It's wonderful. In fact, I think that down at New Life Church in Colorado Springs next week, they should show the Adam Lambert video. Because it's just the natural fruit of all the labor that the evangelicals have put into their bogus social movements for the last 20 years. This is the fruit. You said they were equal. You said they should not be discriminated against. Well, if you're going to let Madonna prance around on stage like a slut, and you're going to allow that to be tolerated in your culture, you're going to get this too. This is next. This is next for all you evangelicals. This is what your teenage children are going to be into next, okay? All those R-rated movies you tolerated and all that garbage you let your kids watch on MTV, this is next, evangelicals. Congratulations. You sent your kids to the public schools so they could rub elbows with kids who watch this kind of garbage and they could see this kind of filth. This is coming. Let's see. Now, apparently from Los Angeles, the Reuters Wire says that Adam Lambert, there's been furor now in the gay community. So I saw this headline, Adam Lambert furor spreads to gay community. I thought, are the homosexual advocates going to stand up and say that, hey, he went too far? What's that? Oh, okay, yeah. So the homosexual advocates, are they going to stand up? Because obviously they're like, you know, they're in a pile right now. But are they going to stand up and will they get off out of the pile and stand up and say Adam Lambert went too far? Are they going to do that? Let's read the article from Reuters. Singing and dancing stoked a controversy in the U.S. gay community. You see, CBS ABC kicked him off the Good Morning America show because he kissed a boy and did a bunch of other deviant things on stage. But CBS put him on the early show where Lambert declined to apologize, saying, "I'm not a babysitter, I'm a performer." I mean, I'll hand it to the kid. I mean, he's obviously a bright kid because he's right. He's not fit to be a babysitter, that's for sure. And he is a performer, and he's going to teach your kids. He says, "I admit I did get carried away, but I don't see anything wrong with it. I don't see how people could get offended." Okay, well, let me retract what I just said about Mr. Lambert being bright, because he just contradicted himself within a three-second span. He said, "I don't see anything wrong with it. I do see how people got offended." Adam, the reason people got offended is because there's something wrong with it, you moron. Okay, so Adam's not as bright as I thought. He's probably a great decorator, though, and good at coordinating his handbags and eye makeup and earrings and whatnot. I'm sure he's great at that. Anyway, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation has come out, and they've said, what, that he went too far? No. The problem that the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation had was that the early show on CBS blurred out Lambert's kiss. They blurred it out. You know, they put that blur dot over it. And they came out and said that that reinforces an unfortunate double standard that is applied to openly gay performers. That's what the homos are upset about. They're upset that you don't show the kiss. And it's kind of hard to argue with them if you're a modern, secular, conservative, or an evangelical, because you've tolerated Madonna and Britney Spears and all the other sluts. And you've told the homosexuals that they're equal and that they should have all the rights of other people instead of telling them that they're criminals. And what they're doing is destructive not only to themselves but society, and that what they're doing is a crime. That's what evangelical Christians should be telling open homosexuals. All right. Let's see. Do we have anything else here? I've got to close the show. Kick a Jew Day. I'm not going to do Kick a Jew Day. High school performs a gay musical on Thanksgiving. Okay. No, I can't talk any more about it, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm going to throw up, okay? Needless to say, if you're sending your kids to a public school and you're letting them watch MTV, I mean, you should just resign as a parent. You're unfit, okay? But let's end with something a little bit more uplifting. Well, not uplifting. I just want to end with a story that doesn't make you physically ill, okay? I'm going to try that. And unfortunately, this is all I've got left, ladies and gentlemen. Dateline Bridgeville, Pennsylvania. Police say a Western Pennsylvania man told them he kicked his girlfriend's puppy to death because he was upset that the pit bull wouldn't behave before the start of the Pittsburgh Steelers game. Yep. He kicked this puppy pit bull to death. William Woodson of Bridgeville, Pennsylvania, was jailed last Monday on charge of animal cruelty. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's report that a witness told police that Woodson was kicking the dog down the street shortly after 1 p.m. Sunday, which is when the football game began. Police say Woodson was supposed to be taking the pit bull for a walk, but apparently the animal resisted. By the time police arrived, the dog was dead. Police say Woodson says he didn't like the dog and was upset that his live-in girlfriend bought the dog. All right. Well, hey, at least it wasn't about homos and freaks. At least it didn't make you physically ill. It's not a happy story, you know? But it just reinforces my feelings about live-in girlfriends and pit bulls. You shouldn't have either one. All right, that's it. That's the show, folks. I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, KGOV Radio, KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life, Theology Online, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, my extremely attractive audio engineer. And so until next week, ladies and gentlemen, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.